that completes our agenda for the day. Mr. Lang, do you have anything you wish to add or share with the commission for the good of the order?
Well, if you have anything else to do tonight, I think it's 6, I think at 5:30, probably 10 minutes to 6, the Georgetown Division of the U.S. Route 113 Study Group is meeting at the Chair Center, if you want to go.
I defer to be there.
Do you have anything else you wanted to add for the go there?
No. We meet next, okay. We have a public hearing next Thursday.
Mr. Chairman.
Public hearing next Thursday.
Okay. Yeah. Well, Mr. Abbott, you have a couple items.
Yeah. The first one, I guess we're pretty.
When's the special meeting going to be for May?
Right. That's a good idea.
Well, the regular meetings are.
Regular meetings are 10th and 24th.
17th would sound like to me.
3 o'clock.
3 o'clock on the 17th.
We're going to do it on Thursday or Wednesday? We're going to keep staying with Thursdays or do Wednesdays?
You still have your radio show on Thursday?
Yeah. Would Wednesday work better for you?
Wednesdays will work better for me for afternoons.
What would that be?
That'd be good. Make it 16th then, wouldn't it?
16th.
The only,
3 o'clock.
The only thing I would say is I have a meeting that's either the 15th or the 16th that I can't miss. It's an annual bank's annual meeting. I'm pretty sure it's the 15th, but I'll check first thing in the morning. So let's
hold off on.
Well, let's say the 16th, unless something happens tomorrow morning. I just have to check my books out. In fact, it's in my car. But let's go with Wednesday right now, unless you hear different tomorrow. Okay, that sound all right? Anybody else have anything? Mr. Lang's got, or Mr. Abbott's got one more. Then it should be your turn.
When the commission grants preliminary approval on a subdivision, an RPC, or a site plan, we write them a letter, tell them, you know, it's approved, blah, 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 what approvals you need. We got in a problem on a fair field at Long Neck. There was a multifamily site plan a couple years back, and it was stated on the site plan that there were no wetlands on the site. They went out and built it, and they built a lot of wetlands. One of the agencies that I put we need the approval from is the Corps of Engineers. A lot of the engineers and surveyors are saying that if there are no wetlands on the site, would the commission just accept that statement from the consultant? And I keep telling them, well, that's how we ran into the problem down at Long Neck. And then they're saying they're having problems getting the JDs from the Corps right now.
I know that that's a problem, to getting the determinations.
Did an engineer or somebody certify that there were no wetlands on site on that one that we have a problem on?
I mean, was there an actual wetlands?
It was just a note saying that there were no wetlands on
the site. I think we could accept the written report of a person who is certified to do wetlands delineation and so on.
Then they're putting their license behind it.
Yeah, because then their license is up, and if there's a problem, we can go back to them.
But not to a surveyor or a professional engineer.
No, it can't be. It's got to be a wetlands person.
Coastal and estuarine research, yeah. Evan Mauer or somebody that,
right.
Somebody at the Corps could give us a list of who they would accept me.
Yeah, somebody that's approved by the Corps.
Ed Linnae, and we know which ones they are mostly.
Yeah, and I think we could accept their written statement report.
That's like a survey. They're certifying that it's correct.
Right.
And the difficulty that we've seen, Shane knows it, so there's years before they can get a determinations.
Oh, I know. They're just not doing it.
Well, it's been determined by the scientist. It's been flagged by the surveyor, engineer, but the Corps doesn't respond to it because they're concerned about the lawsuit they went through last year. And,
right.
And then Philadelphia branch is one that's difficult for some reason. They say the Baltimore branch is pretty quick at getting it done.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's in-house in Philly against D.C. group waiting for instruction or something.
Yeah.
They don't seem to have that problem in the Baltimore district.
Mr. Johnson, you have the floor, sir.
Two things. One is a reminder to the commission that I will not be here for the next commission meeting on April 26th. And the second was I had sent a letter to all the commissioners concerning a procedural matter concerning the receipt of information, and I'd like to have that on a, put on a specific agenda for discussion.
Well, not the 26th.
No, you can have it on 26th. It might go quicker.
Let's do it. You know, maybe this either the special meeting in May or whenever you want, wherever.
What was that? You won't be here next.
I will not be here next Thursday.
Next Thursday, okay.
I guess the 10th or whatever.
Yeah, I think Mr.
or 17th.
Johnson makes a good point on that as far as the 3-day period, whether that's enough time. What my thought is, I would be also interested to hear the opposite view to see what is a, you know, not knowing the time frames that people out there are dealing with. You know, I don't want to make it too long where, you know.
You don't.
Yeah, you don't necessarily have everything. I mean, it's constantly coming in, and you know, so it's a balancing. I'd be curious if we make the right time limit or the right regulation that we consider what some of the.
Well, the practical aspect of it, sure. That we can make the rules, but agencies aren't going to play by them. They're still going to play by their own rules. But
I mean, we've got our own county engineering department that gets us stuff
day before
4:45 or whatever.
Day off.
Yeah.
Yeah, we make sure we look for it.
Yeah, right.
And it used to be a couple agencies would send us a fax, and we'd go to council fax machine, and we'd have to go in there to make sure we didn't have any faxes. But that hadn't happened for about a year now, so we're okay there. Seen engineer just for those comments on SOAR seem to wait till the last second to get it to us.
So like filing tax returns.
Would you ask a selected group to come and?
I don't know. I probably, if it's on the agenda, I would imagine that
somebody will show up. And they'll pass the word, so.
Yeah.
Okay. Anything else, gentlemen?
Yeah, I have one thing, sir. But we can do it another time. I met with Brooks Cahill, the drainage section of Denrec here in Sussex County, about the tax ditches. And he has about a 15 or 20 minute PowerPoint presentation. Mr. Cahill said he'd be willing to make to us at some point, or I can kind of give you the fast forward version of it. There was a tax ditch task force, easy for me to say, brought on by the efforts of Representative Hockett Carey, whom I spoke with on Tuesday, and Representative Thornburg. For the longest time, these tax ditch right-of-ways have gone undiscovered. A part of that problem, Mr. Cahill gave his presentation to County Council, isn't that correct?
He gave a presentation at a luncheon with the Conservation District. It's an annual thing they do, just meet with the district, and they gave a presentation, showed some pictures and slides of some of the encroachments that have taken place. Yeah.
These right-of-ways and construction easements variously have been in effect since 1951. A lot of them are going for 16 and a half to 30 feet, but what is being discovered now is that there's no shortage of these that are as much as 250 foot construction and dip out easements. It's starting to cause some problems. And Representative Carey told me Carson Acres and Overbrook Shores.
Yeah, Carson and Acres.
Where these right-of-ways have not been discovered because they were all recorded in prothonotary when the various attorneys were sending their title searchers downstairs to record their deeds. They weren't coming up with them. And they even weren't. If they looked for them, they were not finding them in the name of John and Jane Doe. They were recorded in the name of Vaughn Tax Ditch, McGee Tax Ditch, in the name of the tax ditch itself. So that they're coming up with some problems of houses, sheds, fence, dog kennels, all this and that, and nicely salted lawns and landscapes, where they're going to be backing these excavators off and causing some cares and concerns. So he's got a couple things, Mr. Lank, correct me, but he said they would like a consideration, I guess, by County Council to require these tax ditch right-of-ways to be discovered prior to a preliminary approval of a site plan, to require the tax ditch right-of-way to be shown on the record plan for new development projects, and further asking if Planning and Zoning would hold a certificate of occupancy, withhold a certificate of occupancy if a right-of-way encroachment is discovered by, I don't know who would do that, but.
Yeah, well, a couple things, just to follow up on that, there's been some new law that's been passed where the indexing has been greatly improved. So with recording deeds, it's not as cumbersome to figure out where these are and what they are as they had been, say, a couple of 3 years ago. So that's not that onerous of a requirement to get that information put on a site plan.
That's what Carrie Hocker and Thornburg sponsored. It just went into effect in June of last year. So it's now as properties, it's starting to show up now as properties are being conveyed out of some of these newer developments. There's going to be a second phase of that law that's going to take effect in July of this year. And that's kind of the long and short of it. Since January of this year, his office has had over 400 inquiries. So the pinball machine's starting to tilt on this. I made an inquiry, and I think I was number 282. And when I met with him Tuesday, he said they'd had over 400 now.
You didn't have a tax ditch on your little two-lot subdivision, did you?
Just through the middle. By the cart path.
I sat through that meeting with the council in the district, and it was a good presentation. It was short, but the thing that confused me is that typically just common sense and what I've heard for a few years I've been here is that you have a construction easement, you have a maintenance easement. You get a construction easement that's a certain width and usually it's wider than you need so they can get the construction done. Then once they build it, that construction easement goes away. And then you have a maintenance easement to maintain the ditch in this sense for maintenance purposes, one side or sometimes both sides, but typically they're on one side. And they said that the AG told them that 250-foot construction easement was a valid easement, it goes into perpetuity. I never heard that one.
Yeah, I've only heard... The way I've always sort of dealt with construction easements, I haven't read the specific language. The problem with tax ditches, they're all different. You know,
I know they're all different.
But they're temporary in nature. So, like, if you're putting equipment or materials on that site, you've got the ability to do that when the construction's done. You know, you're off it again, and the maintenance or the construction easement sort of goes away. It comes and goes with the need for construction.
I've never seen one that was 250 foot. The other thing was that what we've seen over years is that originally the tax ditch easements were like 11 foot. Then they changed to 16 or 16 and a half. Then they went to 25 and then some 30s. And then they threw that 250. That amazed me because I'd never seen one that big.
Exactly. And I posed that question because you and I talked about this last Thursday evening to Mr. Cahill. And he said, according to their attorney, who said this right away acts as an easement, and whether we agree with it or not, that their position is it does carry the force of law and is in effect, and if it's 250 feet, that's what it is. They seem to be willing in some cases to reduce it to 50 foot, but it's holding people up in getting septic permits, and there's over, I think, 11,000 miles or something of tax ditch in this state.
True.
Most of them are here.
20,000. And 713 parcels are in tax ditch watersheds.
Well, the other thing too, when we had that meeting, I suggested, and I think the council agreed to me, that it would be a minor amendment to the ordinance to make it specifically clear that tax ditch easements have to be shown. That way we can see them in the plan, we can prepare more for the design of the lots to make sure they have enough depth to make them buildable and usable without encroaching in those easements.
Right.
I mean, that's look like a minor change. The ordinance does reference specifically that easements should be shown. I mean, that could be electrical, any kind of easement you can imagine, and typically they're not all shown, but some are. But we need, that would be one that we could be more specific about.
Yeah.
But utility easements, they come a dime a dozen. There's utility easements recorded every day. That would get downright confusing for somebody to track them all. I can understand that for electric or water lines, that type of thing. But for a tax ditch, that's permanent.
Like what Mr. Robertson said, these haven't been discovered until here in the last few months because the title searchers or whatnot weren't knowing where to find them.
Well, they were in Pathonetary, and they've since been moved to Recorder Deeds.
Recorder Deeds.
And they're being accessible online, for one, and they're accessible through Recorder Deeds office so people can...
I mean, those books, too, the original ones, they should have been up in archives. I mean, they were all yellow paper going back to the 1800s.
They'll read, too.
Okay, anything else to go to the order, gentlemen? If not, we stand adjourned.